It's Friday, February 12th. With the offseason behind us, we're going to look ahead to the wild NFL offseason. But first, guys, a special treat. Super Bowl champion Ryan Jensen, the center for the Tampa Bay Bucks, is going to join us. I'm Jeff Schwartz. Matt Ford will be along in just a second. This is Jeff Schwartz, Smarter Than You. We're going to start with Ryan. I'm so glad to have him on, repeat guest. And then if you want to hear us talk about Russell Wilson, Pat Mahomes, kind of final autopsy of this game, look forward to next season. That's at the end of the Ryan interview. We want to get you guys started very early with Super Bowl champion Ryan Jensen. And here he is. All right, guys, we promised you Super Bowl champion. We have one, Ryan Jensen, Tampa Bay Bucks center. Our first repeat guest, by the way, and survivor of a boat parade. Ryan, welcome in, buddy. Congratulations.
Hey, Jeff, appreciate you having me. Yeah, it's been a crazy couple of days.
You sent me a picture right after he got off the boat parade. how it looked bad for Tom. It looked bad for you, but I'm sure it was a ton of fun.
Oh yeah, it was unreal. Just being able to go down the harbor and see each side of the harbor lined with thousands of Bucks fans. It was surreal, and I think that's when I actually had my moment of, holy cow, we actually won the Super Bowl. And like it was kind of hard to find that moment because I felt like we kind of dominated the game, and towards the end of the game it wasn't very emotional towards the end. So I think that was my moment on the boat, just kind of like seeing all the Bucks fans line in the water and all the people on the boats. I think that's when it really hit me. It was like, holy cow, we did it.
I was going to ask you about that because, it was a weird year. Obviously there weren't as many fans in the crowd for the game. The game was kind of a blowout, but was the whole experience, we'll talk about the whole experience in length, but was it what you thought it would always be? Because I've dreamt about winning Super Bowl. I wasn't able to do it. Was it what you thought it would be?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of crazy, obviously, with it being with the COVID year and, especially being in our home stadium, and, both teams weren't in a hotel the week before the game. I think talking to other people that have been there, the experience was definitely different this year from, a player experience with not being at the hotel and the media frenzy and things right. like that. But the game and the after party and the celebration, that was all, I think, about what I expected.
Let's go all the way back to March. You actually texted me and said, hey, Tom Brady is coming to Tampa. And I was like, oh, whatever you say, Ryan, I'm not believing you. He's not coming to Tampa. And then 24 hours later, he did come to Tampa. And we detailed how he called you and the town, everything. So you finally get to training camp in August. New quarterback, obviously, the same offense that you've been in, but Bruce and Byron Leftwich and Tom have kind of all worked together. When did it start to click, you think, within the offense? Like, at what point of the year do you feel like, okay, man, we kind of got this thing going the right direction?
Yeah, I think the first Green Bay game was our first real dominant performance as an offense. Defense played great too that game. But I feel like after the first Kansas City game, something just clicked. And I mean, when you look at stats and you look at what we did the last, nine games of the year, including the playoffs, you can really tell that our offense hit a different level with confidence and just performance. So, it took a little bit of getting going, especially without having OTAs and, no preseason and stuff like that. But, I would say that week 10, 11, 12 range is when we really started to kind of start click as an offense.
Now you guys had the latest bye in all of football. So you had that bye, you come out, you have not lost a game since the bye. Was there something specific? Because people, I don't know if they know how byes work. You don't practice, obviously, but you self-scout, right? You go over all your plays, you figure out what you're good at, you add and subtract from the offense. But ever since then, it felt like you took off. Was there something that you guys consciously did differently on offense to get yourself to a place where obviously you could win the Super Bowl?
Honestly, I'm not really sure what changed. I feel like, obviously we did all the self-scout and you get all those reports on, what you're doing good, what you're doing bad, formation, recognition, stuff like that. I feel like as an offense, we just start performing better and doing the simple things that much better after the bye week. I know talking to a lot of the guys with a week 12 bye week, when I first heard that, I'm like, oh, that's going to be awesome. It's late in the year, get you rested for a playoff push, but man, having that late of a bye, it's it's hard because that's, you know, it's almost five straight months of football without a real break. So I think I'd rather have a week 9 or 10 bye next year if at all possible. But you know, that's a long time of playing football without a real break.
So you enter the playoffs now, and you have to play all road games, right? Well, you don't have to, but you end up going to have to play. You're the 5 seed. What is playing with a guy like Tom? What does it do to help your team? So I've said this, and tell me if I'm right or wrong, that when you have a quarterback like Tom, all you think about as a player is just doing your job. I know it was New England's mantra. I get it. But literally, like, it's that simple. If you do your job, everyone else does their job, Tom will do his job, you'll win. Is that what it's like kind of playing with Tom, especially when the playoffs start?
Yeah, with Tom in the playoffs and you know, that last stretch, you know, that was just kind of like what's preached, like just be who you are and do what you do, you know, do your job and good things will happen. And, you know, I know Goody, who's our offensive line coach, always used to say that. He goes, whenever you have Tom, you have a chance no matter how the game's going. And I felt like early in the year, we weren't starting all that fast. And then later in the year, and especially in the playoffs, we started fast as heck. I think we scored on our opening drive every game except for the Super Bowl. So you know, having a guy like Tom, where if you do what you're supposed to do, he's gonna do what he's supposed to do, and it's gonna be a successful game, a successful year.
How much did you guys use the underdog mentality against the Saints and Packers? I didn't think you beat the Packers. So, like, I think a lot of us thought that you guys would lose to them. Obviously, you did not. But was that used as kind of like fuel? Like, hey, guys, no one believes in us. We're 4 point. You don't talk about the spread, but we're underdogs in Green Bay, and no one thinks we can get it done.
Honestly, I don't think we really took that underdog mentality. We just did what we did, man. We just went out there and played football and controlled what we could control. And, you know, we always talk about, you know, don't read the clippings and, you know, the headlines and stuff like that. Just put your head down and keep going. So in my opinion, I feel like, yeah, we might've used the underdog a little bit, but honestly, I know we didn't expect to go anywhere and lose. So being able to, you know, go four straight, you know, three straight away games in the playoffs and then win the Super Bowl at home. I felt like there was no doubt that we were able to do that, or we were going to be able to do that.
Let's talk about Super Bowl week, because this is what I'm so fascinated by this. You know, we had talked kind of throughout the week about, you know, the prep for the Chiefs. They were 14-1 this year, obviously, with Pat Mahomes. They ran through the playoffs. Their defense had improved. You guys played great in the Super Bowl, only allowing 4 pressures on 30 snaps. What did you see right away from that defense that you thought, hey, man, our offense has a chance to do well in this game?
I think it just started after, you know, the second drive. You know, we went, I think, 3 and out 2 drives in a row, or, you know, 3 and out a first down, and then we went, you know, we punted. For us, I think we got those jitters out early. You know, the first drive, second drive jitters. And then after that, we just physically decided we were going to be the better football team. And, you know, there's a lot of talking on the field, a lot of, you know how it goes, a lot of chit chat between the O-line and D-line and linebackers and stuff like that. And, you know, as a whole, as an offense, you know, from tight ends to O-line to Lenny running the ball super hard, we just went out there and kind of asserted our will on them. And I think you could kind of see that when you, especially if you rewatch the game, some of the stuff we were doing.
Yeah, I've rewatched the game a lot. It's been very fun to watch. You made me a very smart man because I had tweeted out before the game that you, and for those who don't know, Ryan is so if there's like a movie portrayal of an offensive lineman, that is Ryan. He is the guy that you would expect every offensive lineman to be, right? He's a little grimy. He's not going to look the best in this uniform. No offense, Ryan, especially the white uniforms, right?
Oh, yeah.
Not looking the best. Like, he's got the fiery red hair, and he is going to fight as much as possible out there. He's going to try to fight someone. So I said, hey, man, Ryan likes to talk. Chris Jones, the Chiefs, like to talk. Ryan's going to get Chris to punch him in the game and get a 15-yard penalty. And lo and behold, it happened. Tell us how you got Chris Jones to punch you. It was a big 15 yards. You guys scored on that drive.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how I got to do it. I don't know. I just, there's something about my face, I guess. You know, people just want to punch it. You know, just playing hard, you know, give a little shove in the pocket, and then, I looked away real quick, and then next thing I know, I'm getting hit in the side of the face, and then there's a penalty flag on the ground. So, you know, there might have been a little chit chat before that, and you know, a little extracurricular, but you know, that's all part of the game. It's for me at least, you know, it's who can keep their cool and not do that. That's my game.
I don't think people realize that when someone is worried about like hitting you or talking to you, they're not worried about doing their job. Like it actually can be beneficial to be a talker because you have to back it up, obviously. But like, you know, when Chris Jones is punching, like he can't be as aggressive now. If he gets one more penalty, he's probably out of the game. So like that type of stuff helps. And I just love how you do the last shove. Like I was taught like the last shove, like it just, and I love that it's part of your game. And it, right. I mean, after that, I don't think I heard Chris Jones's game, the name, the rest of the game.
Yeah. You know, and that's kind of my game is to get other people out of their game. You know, I've talked about this at O-line masterminds and you, I think you were there when I talked about it, about if I can get somebody more worried about trying to, you know, kick my ass and doing their job, then I've already won. Like the rest of my day is going to be, you know, a lot of chit chat and, you know, the guy's not going to be as worried about trying to make plays. He's going to be more worried about trying to, you know, whoop up on me. So, for me, that's a win right off the bat.
We had talked on our show and we talked to a bunch of people around the NFL, including like Brandon Thornton and Duke and those guys, about Aaron Stenney making a second start at right guard against Chris Jones. And the offensive line played great. His whole Tristan Wirfs was fabulous out there on the edge. But, you know, Aaron's making a second start, Super Bowl. We had talked about, you know, and you said he could rise up to the challenge. I thought he played great. What did you see in him? I mean, that had to be an experience like none other for him.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, a third-year player like Aaron, I see a lot of myself in him, his kind of career path, where, you know, he's always kind of been that guy who's just been looking for an opportunity. You know, I didn't get my first career start until my third season. So when he, you know, unfortunately, when Kappa broke his ankle in the first playoff game against Washington and he, you know, Stinney stepped in against the Saints, who's, in my opinion, one of the top five fronts in the league. And he went out there and balled out and played really well. And then, you know, we go to Green Bay the next week and Aaron, you know, starts again, plays pretty well, you know, especially against a really good player who lined up on him most of the day. And then, I mean, your third quarter starts the Super Bowl. You know, Aaron really stepped up and played really good football. And I'm really proud of him for, you know, not letting the moment be too big for him.
Let's talk about Tristan Wirfs. You guys drafted him at 13 at right tackle. Now, you had all four of your other offensive linemen already in the roster. The line was really good. But what did Tristan do for you guys this year? Because I think he was the best right tackle in the NFL this year. He obviously didn't get the all-pro votes for that. But I think he was the highest grade offensive lineman. He played great on Sunday.
Yeah, Tristan is one of those – I'll say he's a generational talent. And he is going to be a top tackle for the next 10 to 15 years, however long he wants to play. What he brought was a, for me, especially being the center, like I didn't have to worry about him, you know, not knowing what he was doing. Cause from day one, he was a consummate pro and he came in and from the first day he stepped in the facility, he was already a pro and studying the game and knowing the game and knowing the plays and taking that time. So with Tristan, man, you know, he's only 22 and he's out there, playing the way he played this year. It's amazing.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun to watch. Another guy that's fun to watch, especially in the playoffs, is Rob Gronkowski. I cannot get enough of Rob. Like, I don't know Rob, never met him. Seems like a really fun guy. He plays great in the biggest games. Like, he played, I think, his best game of the year, just kind of in totality in this game. You target him early in the touchdown, a play-action pass deep, and he can block too, right? So when having a guy like that in your offense, how does it really functionally help you guys win?
I mean, with having a guy like Gronk, who is a dual threat tight end, you know, a blocking tight end, but he can also go run routes and then catch balls over the middle and catch the deep pass and just be a, you know, a splash playmaker. I think it's hard for defenses to figure out if we go out there and, you know, a three wide set and you have him playing tight end. It's like, you go cover two, you go cover one, you got to bring somebody in the box because they know we can still run the ball out of that for, you know, that kind of personnel. So, a player like him, even, you know, Cam, too, he's a tight end, but he's also a really good route runner. I feel like it puts, defenses in a bind because are you going to put a sub package against them? Or are you going to, you know, you're going to go base against them? So having a guy like Gronk and like Cam really is, I think it's hard for a defense to game plan against that.
So is he that goofy behind the locker room? I feel like he's not. I feel like he's like out in public. He's kind of like the goofy Gronkowski, but in the locker room, he's not all like that. Is that true? Or is he the same guy all the time?
I mean, I would explain it like this with Gronk. Gronk, you know, the Gronk that the public knows when it's time for Gronk to be Gronk. But, you know, when it's time to work, you know, Gronk turns into the football player and the professional athlete and goes to work. So, you know, as soon as it's time for X's and O's, you know, Gronk is that professional. And when it's time to mess around a little bit, it's a party Gronk. So that's how I would explain it. He's able to flip that switch and be who he is, you know, on the field and off the field.
I'm really glad you mentioned being who you are, because I was reading an article, I think Sam Farmer wrote for the LA Times about Bruce Arians. He interviewed him the day after the game, and Bruce was talking about how he's like, Tom, man, like, take a day off. Gronk, take a day off, like, from practice, not obviously on game day, and just BA letting you guys be who you want to be. What influence did he have kind of in making Tom and Gronk comfortable and just, like, taking a day off? Because, guys, most teams let veterans take days off. Belichick obviously doesn't. It makes a big difference to take a Wednesday off in week 16.
Yeah, you know, especially, you know, Tom being, you know, 55 years old or however old he is, and Gronk, you know, Gronk's getting older too. I feel like being able to have that communication with your head coach and said, hey, I need individual off and I'll take all the team reps. I'll take 5 of the 10 team reps. That's huge for older players, because obviously we know our bodies the best, and going out there and, you know, getting half the plays off during practice or, you know, a whole Wednesday practice off is huge for getting your body back and making sure you get to the race on Sunday.
What is it like for you with Tom preparing during the week? Because, you know, I mean, for most, you know, most places, you know, we install base and we install third down Wednesday, but there's a time when the quarterback and the offensive line meet during the week to go over pressures, right? And I remember with Eli, he'd come and he'd run an hour meeting after practice on Thursdays. We'd go over it. With you and Tom, how was your relationship like? Because for, you know, I'll reiterate, for those who kind of don't understand, you know, the offensive line handles the run game, right? We point who we're going to. In the pass game, it's a coordination between the center and the quarterback. So what was your relationship like with Tom during the week, kind of preparing for each game?
We'd always kind of talk, me and him, we would talk about, you know, the pressures that we're going to see. And I know, it was kind of nice too, is Tom would actually talk to our offensive line coach and kind of let him know what he saw and how he felt the best way to pick that was, that would be. And then they would actually coordinate the protection plan, on Monday before we even got in. And, so being able to, you know, have the offensive line coach, you know, Goody and Tom on the same page on Monday made it that much easier when install came on Wednesday. And then during practice, in between periods, as an offensive line, tight ends, and a couple of the receivers, we would get some of the coaches that weren't coaching the scout offense, some of the players that weren't on scout offense. We would actually go in between periods and run through 5 to 6 pressures, you know, per period right there. So being able to have that, you know, quick 5-6 minute pressure walkthrough, yeah, was huge. We started doing that after like week 13 or 14. And that really, I felt like helped us as a whole, being able to see pressures and what they do.
Well, that's in the offense got much better too. So maybe that's a good, you know, tangible reason why the offense get better. Back to the game now. So you're up 21-9. Then you run that little, did you call that a scissors off the duo look, or what do you call the touchdown run?
The touchdown run to,
yeah, to Fournette, the long one behind Marpet. Is that a scissors concept?
We call it a power bounce concept.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So like power lead.
It was run awesome. Duo all game. You run duo all game. Everyone's in the box. You pull Marpet around. You score a touchdown. You're up 28-9. Did it sink in then, like, we're winning the football game, or you were still kind of in that mode of like, we got to keep going?
For sure. You know, we come off the sideline. You know, you celebrate for half a second, then it's right back to, all right, we gotta keep our foot on the pedal, because with a talented player like Patrick Mahomes, you know, they're never out of the game. What our defense was doing to their offense was unreal. with how powerful an offense that the Chiefs have. But, you know, it's one of those things you can't relax in a game like that, especially against a playmaker like Patrick. I mean, some of the plays that if, you know, things would have fallen a little bit better for them, they would have been right in that game with some of the improvised plays he was making. It was unreal. So with a guy like Patrick, you gotta score every time you touch the ball.
I'm glad you mentioned the defense. I think far too much of what we talk about this game is focused on what the Chiefs didn't do rather than what you guys did on defense. I was so impressed watching the film back. The discipline, the physicality of the tackling, the pass rush. You know, you're not in the defensive meetings, obviously, heading up to the Super Bowl, but did you see in practice that this defense was up for the task of taking down the Chiefs?
For sure. You know, there was, you know, on Wednesday, we always come in and, you know, keys to victory. You know, we talk about keys to victory as a whole team. And that was something that was brought up is getting pressure on Pat and making him feel uncomfortable in the pocket, you know, even though you kind of want to keep him in the pocket, but you want to make him feel very uncomfortable in it. So that was definitely something that was talked about is just getting pressure on him. And, you know, all the young players that played on defense, you know, Winfield is a stud. You know, he had a heck of a game. The secondary played lights out, especially when, you know, when Pat was running around like a madman trying to get the ball out with our secondary plastering on all the wide receivers and tight ends. It was a fun game to watch from the sideline.
Yeah, so that Chiefs offensive line was obviously down a bunch of guys. And your defensive line played out of this world. I mean, obviously going into a game like that, you'd imagine this would happen, right? But I think a lot of us felt, hey, you know, Pat Mahomes could just make it right. But at some point, you just can't, right? I mean, like the offensive line, if you guys were out for your four best guys, no one's winning that game, right? I think a lot of us got it wrong, I think, for the assumption that it doesn't matter because of Pat Mahomes. But in the end, my first reaction was like, of course this is going to happen. The team with the better offensive line, better defensive line won. Watch your defensive line go to work. Must have been fun on Sunday because they terrorized these poor backups.
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't have to play them because they were rolling. You know, as an offensive line having, you know, two, three guys out who are high quality starters in this league, you know, that's a tough task. And for being for the first half of my career being a swing guy, backup guy. Yeah. You know, I kind of feel for him because I know how that can be if you're not in a rhythm starting and playing a lot. You know, offensive line is, for me at least, a big rhythm game, and being able to stay in a nice rhythm and a nice groove and getting thrown into, you know, a Super Bowl with, you know, two of your best players out is hard.
So you guys eventually take an obviously commanding lead. You intercept Devin White, not you. The Devin White intercepts Pat Mahomes. You go to kneel to end the game. What'd that feel like, man? Like, what was your first thought? Because I've kneeled out some games, obviously, some bigger ones, you know, some ones that you just blow someone out. But this is a Super Bowl. You're at home. You finally won the game. What was the feeling like when you walked out there to just snap the ball twice to Tom Brady to win the game?
It was crazy because, you know, at the end of that game, with about 5.5-6 minutes left, It was over pretty much, you know. It's never over till the fat lady sings, but at that moment you get that sense of, all right, what our defense is doing, it's over. So that kind of, I think, initial shock of winning had already kind of passed.
Yeah.
But, you know, running out on the field after Devin intercepted that, and it, you know, you start looking around at the crowd and the crowd's going nuts. It, you know, it sinks in, and then, you know, you're in victory formation in the Super Bowl, and you kind of look around. It's like this is what kids dream of is lining up in victory, snapping the ball, ripping a knee, and then celebrating. So, you know, being able to end the game, I think we actually ended every playoff game in victory formation this postseason, which is awesome. So, it's the best formation in football.
I think my favorite part of the entire experience on Sunday was the videos that came out afterwards of you finding your mom in the stands. And so you ran, it looked like you ran the opposite direction of where everyone was celebrating to the stands. You, I don't know how your big ass did this, but you hopped over into the stands. You ran and found your mom and gave her a big hug. Was that something that you planned to do? Was that spur of the moment? Obviously very important to see your family in that moment, but that just felt like one of those Disney movies, like go find my mom. And not even like, just like wave to her. Like you literally jumped in the stands and gave her a big hug. What'd that moment feel like?
Man, it was awesome. I love my mom. I love my whole family. You know, just being able to, you know, with her, how proud she was.
Yeah.
Of just everything with this year, you know, just getting to the Super Bowl, but being able to win that and just to see, you know, that proudness and how excited she was. Like I couldn't wait until the after party to see her because you know, with COVID and everything, there was only a limited amount of on-field passes. And I need to go hug my mama, you know, I'm a big mama's boy. And in that moment, I felt that's like what I needed to do. So I said, whatever, I'm hopping up there. The security guard looked at me like, what are you doing? And I said, get out of my way. I need to hug my mama. And it was awesome. Just to see her excitement and her beaming with pride. It was an awesome moment.
And you have young children as well. Like you understand that now, right? Like I think my parents had always told me that you would never know how much we loved you until you had your own kid, right? So now that you're a father, obviously, like going to hug your mom, like you get it. You get why she's so proud. So that moment was awesome. There were many different camera angles. There was one, I don't know, was it your family recorded from like the third deck? There was someone's like, there he is, there's Ryan. Like it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was one of my friends here in town. He's lived in Tampa his whole life. And when I signed down here, I met him and they're up in a box and they're kind of my kid's unofficial Tampa grandparents. So it's nice. It's pretty cool that they were able to be there too.
So the one thing I regret of my career is that, not that I didn't have my son earlier, but my son never got to enjoy kind of the life of a football player, right? I retired when he was two. So your son got to be in the field after the game. There's images of him with his helmet on, with you guys playing in the ground. How fun was it to spend that moment with him? I mean, you never get that back, obviously. It was so cool.
For sure. And it's, you know, with the season, it's been really hard on people's kids because normally on Saturday, at least in the two organizations I've been with, it's bring your kid and family to work day on Saturday.
Yeah.
They come and watch you do walkthrough on Saturday morning, and then they come out and run to you on the field, and you know, you mess around and play on the field for a little bit. And with COVID and nobody being able to do that this year, that made it that much more special because all he ever wanted to do after a game was go onto the field and play with dad. So being able to do that at the Super Bowl, you know, it's just it's an amazing moment. And I don't know if he fully understands yet. He's only three.
Yeah.
But, you know, in 5, 6, 7 years, when look back at those pictures and that moment, I think it's going to really sink in for him.
Well, I think he will definitely remember and honor that. A couple other fun moments from the game Joe Haig, poor fella, the sixth offensive lineman. So TJ Lang and I, you know, TJ, we were talking the day before the game, we're doing a show together, and he said, we were talking about props, and he's like, there's a prop plus 2,000 for an offensive lineman to score. And we're like, plus 2,000 should be plus 200,000. Like, this offensive lineman is not going to score in the game. And then you guys threw the ball to an offensive lineman. Now, it wasn't his fault. It was a great, I think Hitchens broke it up. Like, no offensive lineman was catching that ball, right? It was knocked away. But dude, what pressure did he feel? This is the Super Bowl. We have these plays up every week. They don't always get called, right? This got actually called. Did he tell you how he felt in the huddle in the moments before they snapped the ball when he got his number called in the Super Bowl?
I mean, we'd practiced that play for probably 3 or 4 weeks. There was actually another one that we were going to call at the end of the game, but we ended up not. But, you know, he was nervous all week, but we all trusted he was going to do it. And then if he would have held on to that ball, that might have been one of the best like offensive line big man touchdowns you'd ever seen, hocking it over a linebacker and all that. And he had it, and then I know he was worried. I talked to him after, but he was worried about catching it and then tucking it too fast and then knocking it out of his own hand. So he was like, "I'm just gonna catch it with my hand and I'm gonna leave it there." Well, he had it, and then you know, that made a great play.
I love how like. It's an offensive lineman we're talking about. Like, I'm gonna Mike Evans, I'm gonna high point it and just leave it up there. But it's like, dude, just catch the ball. Who cares how you knock it out of your own hand? Oh my god, poor guy. It was like, oh, that would have been amazing. I was watching Inside the NFL, and it's fun to laugh about now because you guys won. But when that snap went over Brady's head, he gave you a death stare. I took a picture. I'm going to send you the picture. He gave you a death stare. I think it was you. I don't know who else it was. He gave you a death stare. Have you gotten many death stares from Tom Brady this year? It looked like a stare that I would never want to see from a quarterback.
Yeah, no, I think that was the first time I've had that look.
so you saw it too.
I saw it. Yeah, it just kind of scared me a little bit, you know?
The camera, like, legit panned in on his face. It was inside the NFL. And he, like, looked up at you, like, because it was 28-9. Like, you guys, I mean, that was, like, the only mistake that was. And he was like, you motherfucker. Like,
yeah, that was scary. Yeah, that was just a.
It happens.
Yeah, it happens, you know.
Yeah,
Cadence got a little wacky because we were kind of pinched against the time. And yeah, just the cadence kind of scared me. And, you know, I snapped the ball a little too hard.
It's funny to laugh about now. If you guys had lost, I probably wouldn't have brought this up. But since you won by so many points, it just the death stare was pretty fun. So,
oh, yeah. No, it was great.
So you guys win. You get in the bus. You go party. I've talked about the Chiefs party last year. How was the Super Bowl? Like, my recollection of the Chiefs last year, a lot of players left the party to go to, like, live in nightclubs, which you can't really do this year. But everyone just, the staff and the players just seemed like relieved it was over. Was that, like, the sense you got at the party? Like, you were happy you won, but just, like, everyone was like, oh, it's just done. We won.
Yeah, for sure. That's huge, especially this year with the sacrifices everybody had to make with not being able to go eat at restaurants and see family and go have fun, you know, outside of football. I know people were just letting loose. And it was an awesome party. And that was, like, the first time, you know, I had been out, and been in really in public besides going to the grocery store or something like that since early July, late June. So, being able to go out and just be out and having fun out in public was a huge, huge relief that it was over. And now we kind of can go back to somewhat of a normal life. So I know that was the feeling for a lot of people was, man, we're glad the season's over because now we can actually go kind of enjoy ourselves again.
Yeah. You know, I didn't know if the season would finish. I thought it would start, which obviously it did, but I just did not know. And look, everyone, I think, did an incredible job at every level. The NFL did set everything up. The front office, the training staff, and you guys did as players. How tough was it to just stay disciplined all year? Because, like you mentioned, you couldn't really do anything. Now, I think football players generally are more inclined to other professional sport athletes to like be more disciplined, right? More team oriented a little bit. But it had to be tough, right? I mean, were guys bitching about it? Was it just more grind than usual? How'd the whole process go this year?
I think the grind was a little bit harder this year because, you know, we didn't really have that outlet of being able to do a bunch of different stuff outside of work. But for us, I know, you know, BA brought up early was, you know, with what we had as a team, the only thing that was going to beat us was the virus. And, you know, we kicked its butt. We didn't have very many. I think we had less than 10 players the entire year that tested positive with it, was huge, but for sure it's tough not being able to go in, you know, have your family in town and take them out to dinner. You know, you're in your house all the time. I know for like date night and stuff, we'd go pick food up and go sit in my car and watch Netflix in the car just to get out of the house. You know, 'cause we couldn't go really sit at a restaurant. They said we could go out to restaurants and sit outside, but you know, it's just to me, it was still a bad look in case something were to happen. But yeah, for me, it was a grind for sure this year. I feel like we as a whole, as a team, we did really well.
So to avoid your son and to avoid obviously being out in public, you guys sat in your car with takeout food watching Netflix. That was what I got there?
Yeah.
And was this is a weekly date night?
Yeah, it was weekly Tuesday night, you know.
You couldn't find a park bench somewhere? Like, there's no like park bench?
Well, here in Tampa, it's so damn hot all the time. You know, it's
So if you wanted the AC off, so the car engine was on.
I mean, come on, I'm 320 pounds. I can't be sitting out there sweating my ass off eating, you know. Nobody likes sweating while they eat.
So I would go find my wife. We'd go like sit at a park bench outside her work sometimes and have like a date, but I never, so that's Netflix and dates. I love it. It was
made the best of it.
So what are you looking forward to most this offseason? Obviously now it's going to be, you know, you're not going to get, I think, the same Super Bowl experience maybe other teams have had because of COVID, but I assume you go back home. So it's the longest you've ever played during a season. What are your plans now for the offseason?
For me, it's just going to go have some fun, get back to Colorado, relax a little bit, you know, when I'm not playing in the Super Bowl, which is the first time ever, the week after the Super Bowl is usually when I'd get back to start training again and getting ready for OTAs and just get my body back. But now I think, you know, you got to take a little bit of time after a 20-week season to get healthy and just kind of relax and have some fun. So for the first month, who knows, you know, I got a couple side-by-sides I'm going to go have some fun with and go camping and just relax and have a good time.
What are you going to buy with your Super Bowl bonus?
I don't know. I got a new trailer for my a new 30-foot enclosed trailer that fits my side-by-side. So bought that. Then I actually bought the side-by-sides this season. So I'm gonna consider that my Super Bowl bonus purchase.
My wife was a camp. She wants to camp too. I'm just not a camp person, man. Like, I'm just a city kid. Like, I just the idea. She's like, let's get a camper, just like go around the country. I go, you could just go without me. So you go out in the wilderness and you just hang out. Do you bring your food? You hunt your food? Like,
bring food.
You glamp. You glamp.
Still tent camp usually. Okay. You know, as a family, like in-laws and my parents, we have this big. Like it's like a 30-person tent.
Okay.
It's got like separate rooms and, you know, you put a wood stove in it. It's pretty sweet. Wait,
a 30-person tent?
Yeah. So it looks like it's probably
like a yurt.
It's almost a yurt, essentially, is what it is. But it has separate.
Oh, little, you like, basically have like a sections. you have like a party tent.
Yeah, it's pretty much a party barge. It's a party tent.
Oh, well, that's like glamping. Oh, here's one. 48. This is incredible. Now I'm looking up. Now I'm going to just spend my afternoon looking up different tents. I could take my whole family. So I don't have to see them at all. All right, Ryan, I'll let you go with that. That's fantastic. Thank you for coming on. Congratulations again. Awesome win. You guys, it was fabulous. Look, I'm obviously a Chiefs fan, but watching the defense and your offensive line work was great. I'm glad you recovered from boat parade. Oh, by the way, lastly, you know, Tom threw that the Lombardi Trophy. People don't know. Only weighs 7 pounds. Were you surprised by how light it was?
I was a little surprised when I first grabbed it. It's hollow. Because it's hollow. I thought it was solid.
I asked my brother that last year. I said, "Oh, it must be 30 pounds." He goes, "No, it's 7."
Yeah, it was a little weird because I went to pick it up and I about threw it through the roof. About threw my shoulder out. I was like, this is all the ways. Like, what's going on here? Cause I thought it was solid, but it's actually hollow. I was really surprised by that.
I feel like Tom was a little dramatic with the toss. Like he made it seem like it was much heavier than it was.
I mean, that was a pretty good distance. That was about a 15-foot throw, but you know, it was,
would you have caught it?
I mean, at that point in the parade, I was having enough trouble catching beers that were getting hucked at me at 60 miles an hour. So I probably would have, either it would have gone through my hands and hit me in the face, or it would have just bounced off my hand into the harbor.
That's incredible. All right, buddy. I appreciate you joining us. Congratulations again. And enjoy your off season, man. You earned it.
Appreciate you for having me.
Thanks you, bud. Well, that was fabulous. Really, really glad for Ryan. He's a great guy. Glad he won a Super Bowl. Some good stories there as well. Obviously, it was, you know, emotional talking about his family, which, you know, I'm not surprised as one would be. I'd be emotional too in that situation. My family got to see me in that spot. And yes, I have looked up tents all day now. I'm fascinated by things of that sort. Nick called it some Harry Potter shit. I don't know what that means. I'm not nerdy, Nick, producer Nick. So I don't know what that means. No idea. But let's talk with Matt. We'll talk about everything we mentioned at the start of the show, a little bit of autopsy, Super Bowl, Russell Wilson, quarterbacks demanding trades. Where does everyone end up? And just an offseason preview. All right, here's Matt. All right, Matt, the season is over. I've not talked to you since the Super Bowl. We've talked privately, obviously, but not on air. How are you? And wow, surprising, right?
I think so. I mean, what's funny is I feel like I owe the listeners a brief apology, because when we were on air last week, I listened to it back. I was kind of lukewarm, like the whole 2 weeks. I was like, yeah, it's the Chiefs. Like, and then you kind of like, everybody knew the Chiefs line was in shambles. And then you kind of like walked me through piece by piece, each person. And you were like, this is a real problem. And I almost changed my pick on air, which I believe I told you. And I didn't, because I wasn't going to just like immediately waffle on air. I ended up betting the Bucks money line on Sunday. And I did chase with the Chiefs live a few times, but I did bet the Bucks money line. And right away I was like, oh man, I'm an idiot. I should have done it on the show. But I will say a lot of the picks we gave out actually ended up hitting, including ironically my one about the team to score first. The team that scores first will not win. It was the Chiefs. It was the opposite of what I expected. Tom Brady did throw a first quarter touchdown. So I ended up having a great first half. Like I bet like all these things that ended up hitting. I bet Gronk to score the first touchdown. I had Byron Pringle over a reception or half a reception, which he got on the first play, and then no other targets. It was a beautiful, betting day for me. But if you followed me on the show, you probably didn't do quite as well. So sorry about that.
I was listening to Simmons' podcast on Monday, and he said that, or I think Sal said it on the podcast, that the book's biggest liability was the Gronk first touchdown. They lost $1 million, over $1 million on that touchdown. Wow. That was one of the biggest liabilities. Look, I was in a weird spot because I obviously, you know, have to kind of pick the Chiefs. Like, I don't really have a choice. But I bet on Tampa because and I've done that before, by the way. I did it for the AFC Championship game in 2018, where I bet on New England, but said the Chiefs would win. Because guess what? That was always going to happen. Like, that was the thing. And I try to make it as clear as possible without saying it. Like, guys, offensive lines do matter. And this was going to be a game where the mismatch was so heavily tilted to one side that it was kind of always going to be this way. And we thought Pat Mahomes would overcome it, and so did I. I've been getting heat for like picking the Chiefs, but kind of really liking the Bucks. And we did a show, my pregame show with Fox Sports on Sunday. I'm wearing a Mitchell Schwartz jersey. I'm wearing my Chiefs hat, and I took the only one to take Tampa +3 on the entire show.
Wow.
Everyone took Chiefs -3. And I was like, guys, like, I'm kind of telling you, like, I'm giving you a hint here as best I can. And one of them was like, oh, Chiefs are going to win by 2 or 1. I was like, sure thing. Like, but I just had a feeling this. But the narrative coming out of this, Matt, before we get to some offseason topics, Russell Wilson, Tyler Heinicke, some other things, is that we've taken the attention from where it should be in this game, which was the Bucs played so good on defense. I cannot explain to you enough, as an offensive guy, how impressed I've been watching the film. I've watched the game 3 times now. Every time I watch it through again, I find something else Tampa did well. They just played so good on defense. Andy Reid and company, we talked about in the episode previously to this one, just did not game plan it very well. They expected one thing. It didn't happen. And it's really hard to adjust. They tried to adjust. They tried running a bunch of it. Just did not work. The attention has turned to everyone trying to tear down Pat Mahomes since then. And I get it, right? Most of the time, when a team does not play well on offense, you blame the quarterback, right? They have bad throws. They're not accurate. Matt, this is not all what happened in this game. If you have a list of things that went wrong in this game, Pat Mahomes is at the very bottom of it. I mean, I went through, like I said, the film. He missed Hardman. I think it was Hardman on the first drive, right?
Yeah.
That was like it. That was it.
Right.
One time on a screen, he threw the ball late because the guy was in his face. But that was it. Like, he played really well, guys, and it's hard to admit it because they lost and people want to knock down the greatness. They don't want the next GOAT to be here. And they really hate that us in the media are in awe with what Pat Mahomes can do. But I didn't think I'd have to defend him. But everyone who watched the game said he played well. Everyone knows what they're talking about, said he played well. But yet, user 87898 turned on Twitter is like, he's a bum. Like, guys, maybe trust everyone. I saw Lewis Ritter talk about it, Darren Lofsky, Mina Kimes. I mean, Robert Mays. I've seen all of them talk about how well he played, except random people want to hate on him.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, to think that that game is on him, I mean, even people who I talk to who aren't sophisticated football fans at all, just, you know, people who don't even watch football are like, he's running for his life constantly. Like, it was the one game where it was so obvious, like, for once. I mean, I guess this only happens when things go badly. Like, people really notice the offensive line play, like, for Kansas City. Like, they just could not keep up. And, you know, to Tampa's credit, like, they played a great game.
And people are upset that we're talking about that incomplete pass he had, right?
The Darrell Williams one.
First of all, I don't think Devin White actually had the ball in this, like, close to. I think it went above his hands. That's not the point of it. But we do realize that we're talking about it in context of the throw, not really if Devin White could have caught it or not, right? He was parallel to the line of scrimmage and parallel
Darrell
to the
Williams.
Ground.
Yeah. The one that hit him in the face.
The ball
right.
Off of his face.
Right.
Like, it's an incredible throw. So I just want to make that clear. I wrote an article for Fox Sports. It'll probably be out by the time you can listen to this. You go read the version of this as well. I'm just kind of explaining, like, look, there's affairs of the Chiefs offense. We've been over them many times. They didn't really adjust the offensive line. They game plan for zone. I mean, man got zone. They helped the offensive line too much. It's all in there. It's, you know, average time to throw was like 3.5 seconds. Yeah. You think one time the offensive line got beat under 2 seconds and he ran for 9 more seconds. Like, you cannot use average time to throw as a measure of how this game went for Pat Mahomes.
Yeah. Well, two more quick things about this game. The first is somebody compared Russell Wilson's first 3 full seasons to Mahomes's, which is interesting. Okay. They both made it kind of far in the playoffs. I forget exactly where Wilson went. Then they won the Super Bowl in their second year. Then they lost the Super Bowl in their third year. Interesting. I mean, Wilson, we're going to get to in a second, but kind of an interesting path, because what I learned from this Super Bowl is repeating as champions in the NFL is so different than any other sport. It's impossible. The margin for error is so small. Like, if you think about all the things that went right for the Chiefs this year, like, of course the offensive line injuries were a problem. The fact that Duvernay-Tardif opted out is like a once in a lifetime thing. I get that. But they got a full season out of Hill, a full season out of Kelsey, Mahomes was banged up obviously, but like on that defense, there are like 4 guys that do all the lifting, right? It's Chris Jones, it's Matthew, it's Snead at the end of the year, and, you know, a few more guys who, you know, Breland, like these positions, these guys that are good, but they were all pretty healthy. Everything kind of did break right for them, and it's still one or two things go badly and they're a mess. Like, for anyone who thinks Tampa's going to repeat next year, like, let's see if they could be healthy across the board, right? Like, Gronk didn't miss any games this whole season. Like, what are the chances of that? Like, Mike Evans had an injury that looked really serious in week 17. He ended up being fine. It's just to win, you can be as good as you want. There's so much luck involved. And it's kind of amazing when you think about it. And, you know, we all think the Chiefs, all they'll be fine. They'll be back. Their offensive line will be healthy. Like, some point Tyreek Hill is going to lose a step. Then what? Like, at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, it's just hard to do this every year.
It's a very good point you made. And I think I've said this many times, what Tom Brady has done has skewed the way we view winning championships.
That's right.
And you're right. And I've said this before about the Chiefs, is even last year, right? Think about what happened last year. 2 years ago now, I guess. 2 years ago, right? They were about to be the 3 seed and have to go through New England and Baltimore to get to the Super Bowl. Instead, the Dolphins go up to Gillette and beat the Patriots, upset them, which hasn't happened, what, since like 20 years they won in New England?
Yeah.
And the Chiefs got the 2 seed, and then Baltimore lost, and they got to host a home championship game. And you're right about the injuries. They have had, for the most part, you know, Mahomes dislocates his knee, only missed 2 games. Like, they've been pretty healthy. Now, obviously, Eric Fisher's out. My brother's out. The offensive line's a mess. And yeah, now you're getting into to your point, they're going to have to start replacing some of these players eventually. So, like, who's next Travis Kelce? Who's next Tyreek Hill? Now, look, and again, these guys can play for 5 to 7 more years. I'm not saying they need to be replaced, but you're going to get to a point where you're going to have to figure out who are the next guys. Guys, Pat Mahomes is having major toe surgery. He's having a toe, like it's like, yeah. I just think
today,
it's a good example of trying to win when you have to. I thought people talking about the Chiefs winning or Mahomes getting to like five plus Super Bowls. That's ridiculous. Like that's a lot to do. John Elway obviously did it, but he did it kind of in chunks of his career, right? Kind of in the middle and then the very end, really more at the beginning and the very end. So, you know, Jim Kelly went to four in a row. That's hard to do. Like it doesn't happen very often. And the Chiefs, you know, their defense this year kind of got propped up by the offense a little bit, I think, and got a little bit exposed in that game as well. So they look, sometimes losing a game like this can help you know, rebound, refuel. This year we talked a lot about how they didn't finish games very well. In the end, I feel like that was very important in this game, right? Kind of got behind, started off slow, tried to come back in the game, and it couldn't work because they faced a pass rush. I will say this, Matt. The idea that, like, the Bucs have found the formula to beat them. Yeah, if four of the top five offensive linemen are out, if Pat Mahomes has a toe injury, right. Like, yeah, yes. Yes, that's the formula to beat them.
The refs call all those defensive holdings. Like,
yeah. They're going to be back next year. They're the favorites to win the Super Bowl again already. Like, there's a reason why they are, because they're that good.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, I completely agree with that. Anyone, I mean, and also, by the way, good luck with that formula. Sign the best quarterback of all time as a free agent. Hit on Devin White. Get all of your, like, so many good draft picks. Every free agency signing seemed to work. Let's see if they can do it again next year. Like, they might not be a playoff team next year. Who knows? This is the NFL. That's why we follow it.
And we love it. Yeah, you're right.
I want to move to, I mentioned Russell Wilson's name before. I'm curious what you made of his comments this week, where he, I don't have them directly in front of me, but he basically said, like, I'm getting tired of getting hit so much. He's frustrated. The first time where we've ever really heard Russell Wilson complain. I'm curious what you made of this.
Yeah, he's been pretty quiet. You know, people believe that his agent is, especially in Seattle, the one pushing a lot of this stuff. They want him to either what's the right way to put it? Use his power, his influence to try to, you know, make the team better and voice his anger right to the media. So sometimes the players only have that avenue, right? As much you can tell Pete Carroll and John Schneider all you want, hey, you know, I want these guys there, but sometimes the media is the way to do it. And we saw, look, I think after the Super Bowl, it's like, you watch Super Bowl, like, yeah, I want better linemen. That's how we're gonna have to win this thing.
Yep,
totally get that. The one thing that I did not understand was the idea that players should be involved in player evaluations and player signing, because in people's argument is that, yeah, of course, because, you know, they get players get paid a lot of money. Of course, they should be part of the discussion. Why? Industries, if you get paid a lot, you're part of the discussion too. I mean, you can be part of the discussion, but we're not watching film on other players. We just watch the four games we're about to play, and we're not even watching to scout anyone. We don't know the salary cap implications. We don't know how you're developing a younger player who's on practice squad. I wouldn't know any of this. Why would we want to be part of that decision-making process? It's, you know, I think I set myself apart a little bit from the rest of my former athletes that on media, and really from the media in general, I think, is that I'm not always pro player. I'm not always rushing out and defending players. I know it's a bad take by Russell Wilson. Players should not be involved in personnel decisions. Can they ask for your opinion? Hey, Russell, do you know this guy? Should we sign him? Be my guest. But the idea that, like, we should be actively involved in making decisions on who to sign at cornerback when you're, or at safety or at linebacker when you're the quarterback. No, it's not your job, buddy. Not your job at all.
That's really interesting. I mean, I it's funny that didn't like jump out to me as part of his remarks. What I thought was kind of funny is he wins the Man of the Year award, and then like the next day he starts trashing his team, which, like, I just found that to be like so intentional, right? Like, and by the
way, it was intentional, correct?
Yeah, but by the way, I actually think this reminded me a lot of what Aaron Rodgers has sort of been doing and saying, and I think they're both right to say this. Like, first of all, Wilson has he has been hit a lot, right? Like, he leads the NFL in sacks taken since 2012 by 40. Like, that's a significant amount.
I think he's been sacked 394 times.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. And, you know, part of that's on him, I'm sure. But, you know, he's been hit a lot. And I think what he's basically saying is, I feel like him and Aaron Rodgers both kind of understand better than their teams that their window is short. And it seems like both the Packers and the Seahawks every year are kind of this, like, they're always going to contend, but they're not taking the steps when you look at a Tampa or a Kansas City where they go all in, where they're just like, we're in. You know, this happens more in the NBA where, like, you see the Clippers or the Lakers or whoever just like push their chips in and signal to everyone, including the team, like, now's the time. And yeah, the Seahawks just have never really done that. I think it's worse with the Packers, but Seattle, it's like, what are we waiting for?
Yeah. You know, basketball is just much easier to do that, right? You get Anthony Davis, all of a sudden you're an elite team. I mean, the NFL, we've seen dream teams before, right? The Eagles in, what, 2012. Now, like, the idea of a dream team doesn't really work. Like, you have to kind of look at Tampa. Tampa has drafted Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Cameron Brate, their whole, you know, most of their offensive line. They obviously added Ryan Jensen. They added Gronk as a free agent, but Jensen's been there a couple of years now at center. Antonio Brown, you know, defense, Lavonte David, Devin White, guys, you know, they brought in JPP and Shaq Barrett on the kind of the cheap. They brought in Sue, drafted Vita Vea.
Whole secondaries, draft picks.
So, like, it has to be a combination of both. It can't just be like, we're going to go get seven guys in free agency. Like, doesn't, you know, because most teams, you know, they sign their best players back because they want them that badly, right? They find a way to get it done. Most guys that hit free agency, and there's reasons, right? Guys want to cash in somewhere else, someone will pay them more. But, you know, how many times do we see Hall of Fame players in their prime? Like, really elite difference makers in their prime. Maybe not Hall of Famers, but elite difference makers in their prime switch teams. Like, almost never. Because they stay at home. And how can you build up through free agency as well as the draft? You really can't. So I get why teams haven't done it. Now, the Packers should be drafting wide receivers to help Rodgers. Like, that's the, I mean, we can talk about their draft picks, right? Like, Seattle drafting off the ball linebackers in the first round is pretty silly when you need to address. Like, they're not doing, I think, in my opinion, what they need to do in the draft. Free agency is probably not the answer for either one of them, though, either.
I agree with that. But I think, look, you don't need a Hall of Famer necessarily. Like, how do the Seahawks still not have a tight end? Like, how many years has it been since Jimmy Graham?
I mean, they
Graham?
Tried Greg, like, Olsen this year.
Yeah, right? Like, Greg Olsen, like, that's the best you can do. Like, how many, they've drafted more running backs than offensive linemen in the past 5 years, and they still only have Chris Carson, who's great, but, like, I mean, how many more carries does that guy have in the tank? Like, the offensive line, they've drafted, I think, six in the last 5 years, or five in the last 5 years, something like that. And they drafted one a lot last year and he ended up starting, but, like, they can't solve this. And if I'm Wilson, it's like, guys, like, go sign the top level guys and then, like, fill in with these draft picks. Like, Seattle weirdly has been able to draft superstars. Like, they, you know, from Richard Sherman to DK Metcalf, like, Russell Wilson, obviously, like, these guys that they're able to get later, but they aren't pushing all their chips in. And if I'm Russell Wilson and I'm like, guys, I'm getting the shit kicked out of me every year. Like, why aren't, like, can we please go sign Allen Robinson? I'm tired of throwing to David Moore for the eighth straight season. Like, let's go. Like, let's go all in. Like, how many more years do I have to take this? Like, I completely agree with it.
Yes. That's very fair as a criticism of Seattle. Like, you can target people, like, specific positions every now and then, help you in free agency. Plus, you could draft better too.
Yeah, and they just have to be, like, better at self-scouting, I think, because they're further away. They seem pretty far away still, and that's inexcusable when you have a top five quarterback for this long.
I agree.
Well, speaking of top five quarterbacks, should we talk about the biggest quarterback news in the NFL, which was the re-signing of Taylor Heinicke by the Washington Football Team Wednesday, 2 years, $9 million. I mean, should I start buying my Super Bowl 56 tickets, or what do you think?
You know what? God bless him. One start, 60 snaps, life-changing money. Only in sports, dude.
Yeah.
I saw someone tweet out, they thought he'd get more. He played one game. It's not going to get more. They're not going to Matt Flynn him anymore. No one does that anymore. Hmm. But good for him, man. There's nothing to say. I said when it happened, he's a backup, a future backup.
Yep.
and he got paid like a backup. Good for him, man.
Huh. That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think he got really lucky in that Tampa Bay ended up winning the Super Bowl. Like, he had a better game against them than Patrick Mahomes did. Like, he had a very good game, and sure, it was one game, but, you know, he came in without a start before, or without a start in this offense, and played pretty well. What I like about this is, I'm surprised you're not making fun of me for being a little bit excited about it. You should. What I think is that this buys them an offseason, potentially. Like, between the broken down carousel of Smith, Kyle Allen, yeah, and Heinicke, like, they don't have to do that thing that the Seahawks should be doing and say, like, okay, we traded, it wouldn't be Carson Wentz, but we traded two first rounders for Carson Wentz. Like, we're in, let's go. Like, this buys them another offseason to sort of like build that team around them and, you know, not have to overpay for someone that's not a perfect fit.
It does, but you're probably winning four games with him next season, which I guess would be fine with you, right? Because then you'd be in
Is he worse than Haskins and Smith? Like, they won seven with that squad.
Yeah, you're not winning many games with Tyler Haneke. I mean, Alex Smith is much better than him. Alex Smith, obviously, I think should retire, but dude, it's one game, man. It's just one game.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't think he'll end up being the starter. And I do think that if Alex Smith does stay, part of the reason you have Alex Smith is so all the other quarterbacks get that experience of like being around him. So maybe he'd benefit from that too. But I do think they'll make one more move. But I'm glad they at least have an option.
I'm glad he got paid. Like, again, good for him.
Okay. So not a lot of strong takes on Taylor Heinicke.
No, there's nothing to say. He's just a good, it's a backup.
Okay. Well, I mean, we've obviously got a Super Bowl champ that has taken up some time for listeners this week. Is there anything else you want to hit?
I think we might be the first podcast anyone to get a Super Bowl champion on. And I'm glad he made me look so smart. I tweeted out about 2 hours before the game, Ryan Jensen will get Chris Jones to punch him, and it happened. We're having a great offseason on this show. This is the podcast I'm talking about. We're having a great offseason. So please stay tuned to all of that.